Call from mom. Answer it. Call silenced.
Instacart knows nothing gets between you and the game. That's why they make ordering from your couch easy. Stock up today and get all your groceries for the week delivered in as fast as 30 minutes without missing a minute of the game.
You have 47 new voicemails.
Download the app to get free delivery on your first three orders while supplies last. Minimum $10 per order. Additional terms apply.
What's the matter with the clothes I'm wearing? Can't you tell that your tie's too wide?
Welcome back. Chucky's on 106.7 The Fan and NBC Sports Washington, presented by Crop Metcalf, official heating cooling company of the Junkies. You're looking to be their next five-star HVAC technician or plumber? Just visit cropmetcalf.com to join their team. Coming up later this hour, Barry Zito, former Cy Young Award-winning pitcher, is going to join us to talk about his new book. But joining us right now on the Mattress Warehouse Hotline, best-selling author, Washington Post columnist John Feinstein. He's brought to you by Golfdom. Located in Tysons, Virginia, or at GolfdomGolf.com. Visit today to experience the best in golf. On and off the course, Golfdom, live the game. Good morning, John.
Good morning, fellas. How's everybody doing?
John, doing all right. Well. We've got a question for you before we get into sports topics.
We do?
I hope I have an answer.
Oh, I'm sure you will. Why do you get yourself into Twitter battles with guys like Dick Vitale?
That is a great question.
Why do you do it?
It's a great question. You know, the one thing I've realized through the years that Bob Knight and I have in common that is unfortunate is the need to have the last word.
Right.
And it's a bad habit. And it's funny because I talked to Dick on the phone yesterday.
So you don't have a personal beef with him?
No, I like Dick. And I was glad that he called me. And, you know, we talked about the whole Patino thing, and we still agree to disagree, and which is fine. I think I said to you guys a few weeks ago that I had made myself a promise that on Labor Day or the day after Labor Day, I was going to start cutting back on Twitter time, just get on in the morning, maybe put out a couple tweets and then not go back either till the evening just before bed or the next day. And I still haven't broken the habit. It's you know, it's like smoking. I got to break the habit and spend much less time on Twitter. And it's not even so much spending any time arguing with Dick, because it never gets out of control or angry, but it's, you know, with people who are going to start screaming stuff and be profane, and those people I have started to you know, I don't even respond. I just,
by the way, just
them.
To recap, if you don't follow these guys on Twitter, I think Dick Vitale tweeted out that he thinks that Arizona should fire Sean Miller and hire Rick Pitino, and Feinstein lost his marbles.
Well, I don't know that he said they should hire Rick, but he's been pounding the drum ever since Rick got fired at Louisville, that Rick should have another college job, one. But two, the part that bothers me, you know, because plenty of guys who've been caught cheating have gotten jobs. I mean, you know, John Calipari's had two Final Fours vacated, and he's a god in Kentucky, just as one example. But the Rick never did anything wrong. That, you know, Rick's pure as the driven snow, and Rick's not. You know, again, that whole Madam scandal, he blamed it all on a 25-year-old assistant coach who was making $14,000 a year. That this guy's walking around paying off hookers and stuff, and for 4 years, Rick knew nothing. He was Sergeant Schultz, and we all know that basketball coaches, especially really good ones like Patino, are absolute control freaks. Mm-hmm. And so this notion that Patino knew nothing for four or five years, however long it went on, and, you know, he didn't know anything about the Bowen thing, he didn't know anything about that. Stop it already. And you might have noticed that in the statement made by Louisville and Patino jointly when they settled their lawsuit, and by the way, Patino got $0. He filed a suit for $38 million, got zero. What does that tell you? Yeah. In that joint statement, Patino finally says that as the head coach, he takes responsibility for the NCAA violations that occurred. It's the first time he said this since all this started.
Life's just too short to get yourself all worked up.
I agree 100%, Jason. You're 100% right.
Well, because I think what happens is, because I don't think, you know, I'm on Twitter a lot. That's where I get my news.
Yeah, right.
But I try not to
respond to people that say things that irritate me.
Right, and that's the way to do it. And the other thing that happens, I'm sure you guys have had this experience, is, you know, I start back and forth with Dick, and then all people start weighing in and taking, you know, really mean shots at Dick.
Yeah.
You know, you're over the hill, you're this, you're that. And I don't need to deal with that on my Twitter feed, you know. And again, the other day I finally tweeted, just so people understand, I like and respect Dick. He's been great to me through the years, which is all true. I just disagree with him on this.
Right. I would tell Dick the same thing. Stay off.
Well, that's
Twitter.
What I did. Yeah. I mean, we had a good talk on the phone, and the last thing I said was, Dick, we're going to disagree on this forever. I understand your loyalty to your friend, because Patino's a friend of his, obviously. But I think you're 100% wrong on this, and I still love you.
Yeah, yeah. That's fine. That's life.
Yeah. Yeah. No, it's fine.
Exactly. But on the flip side, if that was Coach K that was in Patino's situation and he had the same reputation, you would probably stick up for K.
I probably would. And the difference, of course, being that, you know, other than people who try to create myths, Mike has never been on NCAA probation.
I know.
And Patino was first investigated when he was an assistant coach at Hawaii 40 years ago.
My point is, you play favorites. Everyone does.
Yeah, we all do. Yeah. You know, it's like my friend Tony Kornheiser says, we're all in the tank for somebody.
Oh, yeah.
And look, that's human nature. I gave up on the notion that we in the media are quote-unquote objective years ago. We all have biases. We have biases on everything. We have biases, you know, we're biased on how we make our coffee in the morning. Everybody's biased. Mm-hmm. The point is to recognize your biases. You know, I would hope, to use your example, Jason, that if somebody put evidence right in front of me that was incontrovertible that Mike Krzyzewski had broken rules, you know, that I would look at it and say, ah, geez, I feel terrible about it, but I've got to report it because it's my job. And I think that, you know, as much as I dislike Dan Snyder, I'll give you an example since Tony Wiley quit yesterday. When they signed Alex Smith, you guys know I worked with Alex Smith on the quarterback book. I wrote a column in the Post saying this was a good move. This was a smart thing to do, to bring in an experienced quarterback. Smith would be a great leader in a locker room. All of the Cousins questions would be behind him. You know, and Tony Wiley called me and thanked me for the column. He said, I know how you feel about Dan, but that column was fair. And I said, look, when you guys do something right, I'm going to report it, no matter how I might feel about Dan. And that's what I try to do. Do I succeed 100%? I'm sure not.
By the way, John, thank you for the copies of Bench Warmers.
I'm glad they arrived.
If you want to plug the book.
Well, yeah, I'll tell you what, they're being stolen left and right. We've had four or five in here. So that's good, John.
Yeah, it's like they're fried chicken in here.
Well, it's a good news, bad news joke. You know, it's like when I have a book out, and of course, Bench Warmers is for kids, so I hope the people stealing them are giving them to their kids.
Right.
But people will say, oh, I loved your book. I gave it to this guy and that guy. And I'm like, no. Make them buy the damn book. But if people are interested, that's always a good thing too.
All right. So,
and this book is different. It's another, you know, kids book. You know, I've written 14 of them now, I think, 13 or 14 of them. And this is a new series. It's about a sixth grade girl and a sixth grade boy. And it's about a girl who's a talented soccer player. But the soccer coach, sixth grade soccer coach, doesn't want her on a boys' team. Mm. And we all know this is a battle that goes back to the 70s in Little League Baseball, but it's still going on in many places, unfortunately. And that's really the crux of the plot, how she and her buddy, Jeff Michaels is the kid's name, deal with a situation to get her on the team and then to get her on the field, because even after he's forced to put her on the team eventually, the coach doesn't want to play her, because he thinks it's bad for the morale of the boys to be playing with a girl who's better than they are.
Well, good luck on that, and we'll plug it whenever you want.
I appreciate that. You can read aloud from it in the next hour if you so desire.
We will.
Sure.
Hey, listen.
Quote it to Barry Zito when he comes on.
Barry Zito, it will be on at 8:40. Anyway, let's talk Nats here before we let you go. They're playing, you know, basically wild card playoff games every single night. Now, their schedule was difficult. Milwaukee's has not been difficult, and Milwaukee has really closed the gap. They've won 15 of 18, and they're one back. But the Nats do get the Marlins this weekend down there.
Yep.
The Marlins are poo. The Marlins have lost 99 games. So This is where the schedule softens for the Nats. They've got to take advantage of it. Do you still like the Nats based on the remaining
I do, and I'll tell you why. There's a couple things here. First of all, you're right. They get the Marlins this weekend, and then the last eight are at home.
Right.
We don't know what kind of condition the Phillies are going to be in when they get here, whether they're still in contention. You know, they're sort of on the fringes of contention now, barely. So they could be done by the time they get here for that five-game series. The Indians will definitely be playing for something next weekend. The division seems unlikely, but they're right in the smack in the middle of the wild card race in the American League. But here's why I believe the Nationals are going to make the playoffs. The Cubs are collapsing. They just lost two in Cincinnati.
Yep.
They lost in 10 last night to the Cardinals. They've got to play the Cardinals six more times. And the Cardinals are trying to clinch the Central, so they got plenty to play for, too. The Brewers, you're right, have been hot. And come on, Jason, let's give the Brewers some credit. They lost a guy who probably would have been the MVP.
I know.
And they're still winning.
Yep.
So you could talk about schedule, non-schedule. The fact is they've continued to win without Christian Yelich, and they deserve credit for that. I think the wild card game will be Brewers at Nats or Nats at Brewers. I think the Cubs are, as I said, are falling apart. And I think that's where the Nats have a cushion, that the Cubs just aren't playing well, and they have to play the Cardinals six times. So, but this is the weekend. You're right. This is the weekend for them to sort of, you know, put themselves in a comfortable position going into that last week.
Yeah, I mean, you've got to go to Miami and minimum win two, if not sweep.
Minimum win two. You should sweep. The Marlins, like you said, have lost 99. They're not any good. They got nothing to play for. So you ought to go in there and win at least two and probably three. And if you do that, then you're not on cruise control for the last week, but you're in a comfortable position for sure.
Do you give Notre Dame a shot in Athens tomorrow night?
You know, sure, because we don't know enough about Georgia or Notre Dame yet. They haven't played anybody. So this is the first real game for both teams. Obviously, Georgia has the advantage playing at home. You know, if you play in Notre Dame, you're playing 19 against 11 most of the time. You don't have to do that. Shouldn't have to do that playing at home. And Notre Dame always has talent that's as good as any in the country. I mean, Brian Kelly does a good job of making people think that, you know, it's amazing that we ever recruit a player. They have every advantage you could want in college football, including their own television network. So yeah, sure, I give him a shot. Absolutely, I give him a shot. By the way, though, you didn't ask me what's bothering me in sports this morning, and the answer is refereeing in football.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, it's ugly.
College and pro,
both levels. Yeah,
I mean, there, and some of it is not the officials' fault because there are too damn many rules, and half the time they don't even know what they're calling. You know, this is targeting, this isn't targeting. 2 weeks ago in the Michigan Army game, an Army kid got thrown out of the game for targeting because, according to Dean Blandino's explanation, after the Michigan kid got hit, as the Army kid came in to finish off the tackle, because he'd been hit so hard, he was quote-unquote helpless. Now, how the hell is a defender supposed to know that?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I saw
you know, it's one thing if you come flying across the field and you hit a guy when he's trying to catch the ball. But the guy's been hit, and he's in the process of going down, and you come in to finish off the tackle, and you're thrown out of the game. I mean, I just use that as an example of how bad some of the rules are now. And between the rules and replay and the officiating itself, it's a debacle. I mean, it's making football, I think, for many people almost unwatchable.
All right, John, we got to run. Appreciate it.
All right, guys, have a great weekend.
Yep, you too. Thank you, buddy.
John Feinstein.
If your team's not winning much on the field this season, it's all about the tailgate. You don't want to miss the tailgate event happening now at Priority Toyota Springfield. My buddy Amar Ron and his team over at Priority Toyota Springfield. Right now, you can score a new 2020 Corolla, just $149 a month. How about a new 2019 Camry, $199 a month? RAV4 is $209, or drive away in a brand new Tacoma for $229 a month. Highlanders, also great deals, $259 a month. As always, every new and certified pre-owned Priority Toyota vehicle comes standard with Priorities for Life. It's the best lifetime vehicle coverage in the business. It includes engine, parts and service, oil and filter changes for life, and much, much more. So head on over to Priority Toyota Springfield, ask for Amar, and get yourself some Bish Bucks. Check them out at PriorityToyotaSpringfield.com.
Call from mom. Answer it. Call silenced.
Instacart knows nothing gets between you and the game. That's why they make ordering from your couch easy. Stock up today and get all your groceries for the week delivered in as fast as 30 minutes without missing a minute of the game.
You have 47 new voicemails.
Download the app to get free delivery on your first three orders while supplies last. Minimum $10 per order. Additional terms apply.
Welcome back to the Junkies on a Football Friday on The Fan, presented by the Sportsbook of Hollywood Casino, Charlestown. Every game, every bet for real sports fans. Jason snuck in the college football question there with John Feinstein. That's a huge game Saturday night. Primetime game between Georgia and Notre Dame.
Well, there's some massive games. I mean, 12 o'clock. Actually, it starts tonight. Utah. The Pac-12 is so desperate for a team to get into the playoff and have an undefeated team. And two of their better teams have already lost this year with Oregon and Washington. Utah is that one team that the Pac-12 can kind of rely on. They've never beaten USC in L.A., and they play at USC tonight, laying four.
Where are they ranked right now?
They're top 10, maybe 9 or 10. Mm-hmm. I'm not sure, but that's their hope, is that Utah can go undefeated and be in that discussion. But you got Michigan, Wisconsin. You got Texas A&M, Auburn. You mentioned Georgia, Notre Dame. There's some just big matchups this weekend. Last weekend, you didn't have those games, you know, pitting the ranked teams versus each other, but you certainly have it this weekend.
Utah's ranked 10th in the AP now.
So it's a big one tonight.
By the way, if Notre Dame does pull off the upset, they have Virginia the week after. UVA, who's undefeated.
Correct. UVA's got a warm-up game against ODU this weekend, tomorrow night. But I'm interested in that Georgia-Notre Dame game. I could see Georgia just rolling them out of the stadium, but yeah, we'll see.
I'm just
14 and a half is a lot of points.
I'm looking forward to just red zoning it up on Sunday, because typically Cakes and I are out at Glory Days Grill, and we will be on Monday in Fairfax. Mm-hmm. We kick off at 5, Chad Dukes vs. The World, broadcasting live from Glory Days Grill in Fairfax starting at 2 o'clock on Monday. Then we're going to take over at 5 for the Junkies pregame show. But since the Redskins play on Monday, I can just red zone it up. Maybe go to one of the local spots to watch all the games.
Bickle's looking forward to that, too. So
but
watch all the other teams.
Especially Chiefs-Ravens.
No, there are actually
o'clock?
A couple games that I would watch.
You got to watch that game.
Yeah, I'm interested in that
one. I got to get
sure.
back from Blacksburg Sunday morning early, or you know, early afternoon. Get back in time for those 1 o'clock kicks.
So probably hit the road around
8.
8 a.m.?
Yeah.
Drive about 80 the whole way?
Yeah.
Yeah.
I mean, it's just a brutal trip, especially if there's traffic.
Is that the slog all the way like down 81?
You know that hill in Fredericksburg?
Yes.
Where you know the trucks get up the hill and they can't move.
Right.
I will just imagine there's about 30 of those going to Blacksburg.
Right.
And two lanes, and it takes forever if there's always tractor trailers in the left lane. I get so bitter at them. it could take a while if there's traffic. So I got to get on the road early on Sunday.
She's probably sized us. She's gonna get a good meal this weekend.
Oh yeah, we're gonna go out to dinner tomorrow night, and tonight and tomorrow night.
I mean,
meal doesn't have to do dining hall.
Right.
This weekend.
Meal plans, dining hall. It's fine.
Yep.
But you can actually get a nice dinner.
Yeah, on your parents' dime.
Absolutely.
Good.
That's critical.
Tomorrow I'm going to be looking for off-campus housing all day for next year.
Right.
You're already having to do that?
Oh, yeah. Dude, they go quick like that.
So do you actually have to book them now, or you're just scoping it out?
No, I think you got to start putting deposits down on places.
Remember, really? The campus is overpopulated. They botched it.
Well, I think it's...
Yeah, but they're overpopulated all the time. It's like the...
No, I think it's just that everyone wants to live off campus, and those places go quick.
There are some schools, I don't want to get into it, but we did a visit with my daughter, a volleyball thing, last weekend. And at that school, 98% of the students live in campus housing. Even if it's off campus, a lot of kids live off campus, but they're all owned by the campus. Whatever. But I think that's unusual. You know what I mean?
Mm-hmm. So these girls have to. I mean, they barely know each other.
Yeah, and they know each other for a month,
and they got to decide that they want to live together for a full year
it's
next
a big
year
commitment.
Already.
Right. Yeah,
but she already likes her roommate, right? They get along really well.
No, she loves her roommate. She loves these other girls. I'm just saying, for a lot of kids, they got to make that decision, only knowing their roommate for a month or a month and a half.
Right.
Unless they know him from, you know, high school. But
well, you just boot them out if they do something. That's what we did.
Yeah, but then there goes the rent. You're booting out rent.
Right. You just find somebody new.
Need to replace it.
They just end up being a loser who brings in aquariums and weird animals.
We interviewed guys. So we lived in a dump, right, in the Norwich Road.
Yeah.
I talked about it many, many times. It's slumlords as landlords. Literally lived in a place where we had mold growing everywhere.
Yeah.
It was about 24 inches high around all of the basement. So we, instead of redoing everything, we just hired a contractor to cut out, like, 24 inches high and just cut out that mold that we could see. But I'm sure there was mold everywhere else.
I thought Matt did that. Nate's cousin or brother.
Yeah, we hired him. We hired him to do it.
But I mean, he ended up living with us.
You guys pay him in weed, or did you actually use U.S. currency?
No. He got paid. But we had mold everywhere in the bathrooms and everything. But I don't know. We lived there 5 years. But you know, think about all the people that we interviewed. Did we ever turn anybody down?
Because
we
could
let
see
some losers
video
in.
Of those interviews.
I mean, I only lived there a year and a half, so I'm not
I
sure.
I lived there 5 years.
That I've already forgotten that guy's name. The guy
Which
that
one?
Had like the lizards and everything.
That was Al.
Okay, that's right.
I remember that guy.
Al moved in for
Al was doing so much weed in there, and he brought in an iguana.
Who was the guy who was the bike?
He didn't tell us he was.
See, that's your fear of iguanas. Goes all the way back
to cyclist,
college.
The cyclist who would ride.
Can't remember that guy, but he was stinky.
Oh,
he was
so sweaty.
We had another kid that he went to.
The whole basement smelled like sweat.
Another kid from Connecticut. He loved UConn.
loved.
But he should have gone to stores, not College Park.
Yeah, I don't know why.
What's he doing?
In fact, I think his freshman year, he went to Rollins College. That's in Florida, right?
I have no idea.
And then,
what's amazing is for as dumpy a place as it was, and it was dumpy, there was demand to move in there.
Right, it was a hot spot.
Well, it was kind of near everything.
It was pretty much that one bed. I mean, look, you lived there for five. I lived there for a year and a half.
Right.
And then Roosie the Pussy moved in for me.
Yes.
Ross's claim to fame was... He had a girl in there one day and passed out butt naked. I mean, I don't even know how to talk about it.
You probably can't.
That sounds horrible.
The door wide open, just passed out on the bed.
Just on
you just walk in the hallway and you're going to the bathroom and you look over and Pussy's got one of his girls over there, spread eagle,
hey,
passed out.
What are you going to do? It's college.
I mean, I
always feel partly responsible.
Nobody did anything, but just left the door
open. He's a great kid and he's he's a man. He's in his
grown-ass
man.
He's 45.
But I always feel a little responsible, but not that responsible in that I think he was a decent student as a freshman, and then I was having a tough time going to work. That I had to get to work at 8:30. I was having a tough time because I didn't have a girlfriend, and like Horsey would go out, and Nate would go out.
Horsey.
I'd want to go out with the guys or maybe play basketball till midnight, and then I'd have to wake up and go to work. So I moved out, and I actually subsidized Roosie the Pussy to move in. Like, my rent was $290 a month, and he couldn't afford that. And I said, well, look, if you move in, I'll cover, I think, $50 a month.
Nice.
So he had to pay $240, but it was worth it for me just to get out of that hellhole.
All right.
And he moved in, and I think his collegiate career just went downhill.
Yeah, what
after
are you going to do? College isn't for everyone.
He couldn't handle it. Because then all of a sudden he was going out with Horsey.
Right. Of course.
Horsey was in college
for
6 years.
Well, then he was hanging out with Crickety, and he owed money to like a bunch of bookies.
Right.
I mean, every bookie in College Park was knocking at the door.
That's true.
Crazy.
Well, and the famous story is when we went to the Penn State game.
Oh, yeah. 70-7.
The 70-7 game. And
the bookie
came and
looking for money.
Craig was having a great time, woohoo! And then all of a sudden, the bookie, who's an ex-football player, who played at Maryland, I think was kicked off the team, probably for booking.
Right, for booking bets.
And, he was a big dude.
He sat right next to Craig, and all of us looked like, oh, Craig's going to die today. Today's going to be the day he's going to die. And we can't even really defend him because that guy's a big, giant monster.
He could kill all of us.
Another great story is that same bookie came to the door at that house, and Craig answered the door, and I had actually placed bets with him as well.
You owed money,
but he didn't know what I looked like.
Yeah,
so he came to the door and says, "What's up?" He's like, "Where's this Bishop dude?" And Craig said, "He's not here." And he said, "Well, what does he look like? If I see him, I want to track him down."
Yeah,
and Craig goes, "He's a short black guy with a big afro." So Mike thought I was a black kid running around campus, and I never met him, thank God. And I probably still owed him about $1,000.
When Craig owed the bookie that money, all of a sudden, we did have a gun in the house.
Right.
It was like the world's...
Thank God I got out of there.
No, it was true. It was like the world's cheapest, like, shotgun. Like,
you guys have, like, an old-school, like, Revolutionary War musket?
No, there was like some sort of like shotgun that we had in the house that no one knew how to use. I'm not sure.
Whose room was it in?
Like Menace to Society.
Who owned it?
Somehow Craig brought it to the house for protection because the bookie wanted him. I'm not kidding.
Was it loaded?
Look, I don't know anything about it. All I know is the gun was about this big. So I'd call that a shotgun.
Yeah. Uh-huh.
I don't know what it was. I honestly don't think it could have killed like a duck because I think it looked like the world's
But
like,
it was just the threat.
Oldest.
It was a threat of it. But he never pulled it out.
No, I think he hid in the bathtub one time.
Yeah, he did. And I remember that story.
You know.
Yeah.
But yeah, we did have a gun in the house because he owed so much money.
Mike the bookie, always looking for us.
And that gun was probably like a prop from a movie set, for all I know.
I don't even know if it
even worked.
I didn't click on the story. I just saw the headline. There was a story this week about a bookie who got murdered, I think, in Costa Rica.
Yeah, I saw that. Yeah, what was the deal?
It was like it was one of the owners or someone that works for Five Dimes or some site like that.
It's Five Dimes.
It's a website like BetUS,
right?
All those websites,
right?
And he was found dead in Costa Rica.
Yeah, he's 43 years old.
I need Adam. Adam, can you sign up for an account for me and I'll just Venmo you some money? Can you sign up? Because you're a Virginia resident, right?
Yep, Arlington, Virginia.
Yeah. Am I going to be friends with you for the next couple years?
Like, I'd hope so. I mean, I hope even if I get fired, you still give me life advice.
If you seek it out.
It's working out so well.
If you seek it out, sure. Okay, can you sign up? Because I want to do some gambling this weekend because I'll just be chilling, especially on Sunday where, you know, I don't really care about any of the games.
Right.
So can I make one pick for you?
No. Why would I do that? Just sign up for the account.
I've got a few tingles.
What? Your tingles are terrible.
The last two bets you've made that I know, you lost $25 to me and you lost $20 to Cakes. You're not doing so well gambling.
Drabby, you think I should let
That's
him
fair. You lost, give him at least 20, 30 bucks to play around with.
I was only going to put like 100 bucks in or 200 bucks.
Give him a little bit and then that's his limit.
You want me to give him 20% of my roll?
You got to give him a little taste. He's setting up the account for you.
All right, set up an account, okay? Put in 200 bucks.
All right.
I love it.
I don't know. Which one should I put in? I always just do Bovada. It's easy to navigate. I don't think it's a very good site.
What's your squeaky lean on the Ravens-Chiefs game?
What's the line?
5.5. Chiefs lane.
52.5 is the over-under.
I don't know. I like the Ravens.
Hey, open up a BetUs account because they'll give me 30% in free play of whatever,
referral.
Of whatever you deposit.
Do they have good, is it a good site?
It's a great
site. It pays you?
Yeah, it's a great site.
All right, it is a Football Friday on the Fan presented by the Sportsbook of Hollywood Casino Charlestown. Every game, every bet for real sports fans. But coming up next, Barry Zito's going to join us.
Barry Zito's got a book out called Curveball. I saw an interview on MLB Network. It was awesome. Of course, Zito was a great pitcher for the A's, won a Cy Young back in 2002. And then he signed a big contract with the Giants. And things kind of spiraled out of control for him, I don't know, like emotionally. But we'll ask him about all that. He went from loving baseball to kind of hating it, even rooting against his own team in the World Series. So stick around. Barry Zito, we'll talk about his book, Curveball, coming up.
With LinkedIn Jobs, we tap into a network of more than a billion professionals to help you find quality professionals quickly and easily for any role you need. Marketing wizards? Found them.
Software engineers?
Found.
That project manager I could never seem to hire?
And found. LinkedIn Jobs quickly matches your roles with candidates with the right skills and experience. In fact, 86% of small businesses get a qualified candidate within 24 hours. Post your first job for free and get started at linkedin.com/decide. That's linkedin.com/decide. Terms and conditions apply.
Welcome back. Chucky's on a Football Friday on the Fan, presented by the Sportsbook of Hollywood Casino, Charlestown. Every game, every bet for real sports fans. We will get back to the NFL coming up at 9:20. Andrew Catalan joins us from CBS Sports. He's on the call for the Falcons-Colts game. But do we have Barry Zito on the line?
Yeah, I think so.
I think so.
I see the thumbs up.
Barry Zito joins us. You may remember him as a Cy Young Award-winning pitcher, 2-time World Series champ.
How could you
now
forget?
Has a new memoir called Curveball, which is available wherever books are sold.
Got to get
hey,
my
Barry.
Copy.
Yeah. What's up, Barry?
What's up, fellas? How are we doing?
Barry, thanks for joining us.
I saw the interview you did on MLB Network a few days ago, and honestly, I was floored because we really don't know what's going through professional athletes' minds, what they're going through off the field or off the court, unless they talk about it or write a book. But your career got off to an amazing start. You were 47-17 in your first 3 years. You won the Cy in 2002. You were 23-5.
Three-time All-Star.
You were going to the playoffs pretty much every year with Oakland. And then you signed that big contract with the Giants. So you go from American League to the National League. You signed with the Giants. You didn't really move very far, but you signed a huge deal. Kind of take me back to your thoughts about signing with them and then what was going through your mind after you signed that big contract.
Yeah, I think everything that we do in life goes back to what, you know, what tools were we given growing up, right? From our parents or, you know, whoever. And I didn't have a lot of tools to deal with, let's say, you know, the ego kind of taking me out.
Right.
I was kind of raised in an environment learning that, you know, I was special and different than the rest of the kids, which, you know, is great in the moment to hear that as a kid. And, but I think you grow up and you believe that lie that, like, you know, you don't really have this humility. And I think the humility really allows people to sustain great performance over many, many years. So I didn't have that early on. So I won the Cy Young and I kind of was believing the hype, you know, that people were loving me. It was all about me. And then, you know, I signed the huge contract 7 years later. I just couldn't handle the attention, the pressure, you know, without kind of blowing out, with my ego kind of blew out, you know.
Did that come from your parents or like high school coaches? Where did it come from? What was the root?
I think it came from the parents. Yeah. You know, I was raised in kind of a different spiritual, upbringing, kind of based in Eastern, religion, Eastern traditions. And it was all about, you know, I can manifest my reality and create any circumstance I desire, you know, if I have enough self-control and enough willpower. And so that's a great way to see life when things are good. But when things are bad, you end up blaming yourself for everything that's going on. And, you know, versus relying on something higher, some higher power, higher strength.
So you were, you were just really cocky. You win the Cy Young in your third year in the league. So you just thought you were kind of did you think you were the best pitcher in baseball at one point?
Yeah, I mean, I wouldn't say cocky. I would say it was an underlying feeling of superiority to other people. But if you ever met me at that time,
right.
But yeah, I wasn't like
pretty
walking in disrespecting people. I wasn't disrespecting people. You know what I mean? You would have never known that. It was this very subtle undercurrent that eventually just took me out.
Okay. All right. So then you signed the big deal. What was the contract cakes with the Giants again?
I don't have it in front of me.
It was like $127 million, I think, is what you signed for, right?
Yeah, 126,
then,
yeah.
Okay, and then you start having bad years. Your first year with the Giants in 07, you were 11-13. Your ERA was like 4.5. The next year you were 10-17. ERA was over 5. And then I heard you talk about this. You guys go to the World Series in 10 against the Rangers, and Bochy left you off the postseason roster.
Yeah, he did. I mean, rightly so. I mean, I was definitely the fifth best pitcher in that five-man rotation at that time. And so for me, you know, what happened essentially internally, which is great writing a book, because you're like, I could never say this playing. I didn't want to seem vulnerable and weak, but now I'm realizing that, you know, vulnerability is actually strength. You know, so my perspective has really changed. But, you know, for me, I started to see baseball really is just a vehicle to get me the approval that I needed from other people. You know what I mean?
Right.
And I was trying to get it from my dad growing up and felt like I had to perform and get wins to get his approval and love. And I just kind of transferred that need onto people. So when that contract came in San Francisco, man, I was so desperate for approval and validating that contract that, you know, I just kind of squeezed the life out of my own talent.
Were you enjoying baseball at that time?
No, I was miserable.
You hated it.
Absolutely miserable. Oh, yeah, completely. But, I mean, it didn't matter. I could go buy a Lamborghini, you know, every week. It didn't matter. You know
so
I mean?
You didn't even enjoy all the money. You didn't even enjoy the money.
You can't. No, all I wanted to do was pitch well and you know, be able to compete, but also to add, you know, something to the team, to add, you know, value to my team. And I couldn't do any of that. So Lamborghinis and mansions, none of that crap matters if you're just, you know, you're actually not, the real stuff is not filling you up.
Joined by Barry Zito, Cy Young Award winning pitcher, two-time World Series champ, has a new memoir called Curveball, which is available wherever books are sold. He joins us on the Mattress Warehouse Hotline. Now, just to kind of get into your background, which you alluded to, both of your parents, I guess, were musicians, and your uncle played Bobby Ewing on Dallas, was Patrick Duffy. Correct.
That's right.
That was
my mother.
Cool,
yeah, my mother's sister married Patrick. Yeah, and so yeah, just a lot of show business really in the background. But my father, yeah, he was a conductor for Nat King Cole, and he met my mother. She was singing for Nat, and you know, so yeah, definitely a lot of that stuff in the family.
All right, so let's get back to 2010. You go to the World Series. You're left off the roster. You told the interviewer on the MLB Network that Bochy said, "Why don't you just go home, chill out, get ready, get mentally ready for next spring training. You said, no, I want to be there for the world, you know, for my teammates. But then you started, you actually rooted against the Giants, the team that you were playing for in the World Series.
You know, it's a little more complex than that. But really, you know, I was making $18 million that year, I think, 18 or 19, and a lot more than any guy on the team. And of course, I didn't want to go home. I mean, I wanted to win a World Series my whole life, and I'm not going to go home and watch my team, you know, do that. It was so odd. So, you know, I kind of vied for a spot to just work out. And if someone gets hurt, you know, insert me in. And, you know, it's not like I was out there, you know, wearing like, you know, Braves and Phillies jerseys under my jersey. But,
right.
You know, I was like, there was a part of me that was like, man, if they lose, then it proves they can't do it without me. And it proves to my ego that I'm still valuable to my team. I mean, I was just in the darkest place in my life, you know, covered in shame, really just reaching for anything to validate, you know, like I said, my ego.
Were you depressed?
Oh, yeah. Depressed, anxious.
Were you taking meds? Were you taking meds for like antidepressant?
No, I was raised, you know, with a family that was adamantly opposed to that kind of stuff. So again, I just, you know, I was doing other stuff. You know, I was smoking a lot of weed. I was like, you know, drinking and doing stuff to just medicate myself. So, you know, it wasn't prescription, but it was, you know, the other kind of stuff.
Self-medicating.
Did you have a wife and kids? I assume at the time.
No,
oh,
no, I had just started dating the woman I ended up marrying and having kids with now, but oh, okay. we were just in those initial phases of dating. So yeah, I was just a complete wreck. I mean, really, just mentally.
Wow,
Barry, we have a couple of Orioles fans in here. Poor bastards, root for that team. Chris Davis is a guy who is under contract for 3 more years at $17 million. You know, if you could have a conversation with him about, you know, fulfilling expectations, what would that be like? Because you've gone through it, and he's a guy that, you know, is expected to go out and hit 40, 45 home runs. He's not doing it, but he's getting paid a ton of money by the team.
He's probably in the same mental state as you were.
Dude, yeah, man. I mean, I'm very passionate about this kind of thing. I mean, I guess, and mental health, I know, is really showing up lately, and it's important. And you know, for me, man, you know, that 2010 thing, it really just cracked my ego in half. It broke me as a man. And what I realized for the first time and what I was able to admit is I can't do this alone. I need a strength, right? So I found, you know, in the months following, you know, I found this relationship with God. I found something else to live for besides the approval of the fans, or besides the approval of my teammates. And it allowed me to be liberated, you know, from that cage I was in, you know, so desperate all the time to please everybody in the Bay Area. And eventually it freed me up to, you know, to contribute to a World Series in 2012. And so what I would tell Chris is, man, baseball cannot be your God. And I don't know where he's at spiritually, but, you know, I was worshiping the game of baseball to define me every day. And, you know, that is an easy position to get into when you throw all this money and contracts at people.
Well, Barry, I'm just looking at what you made during your career, and I appreciate.
We're jealous.
I was raised in a religious family, and I get all that. But dude, you made about $150 million. Uh-huh. All right, tell me some of the good stuff. I know you said you buy a Lamborghini a week, and that didn't make you feel any better. I'm not buying that at all.
How do you enjoy your money now?
Tell me about it, man.
Dude, I used to have 6-7 homes. I used to have, you know, 5 cars. Man, to be honest, I own one home with my family in Nashville, and I drive a used Silverado. And, you know, and we try to put our money to good use and help those around us and donate to causes. And, you know, for me, my life is driven, you know, by a higher power now. So I wait on that to guide me on where to use it and how to steward that money. And, you know, I really am a believer in the idea that I've been blessed to bless others. So, you know, listen, you guys can all relate to this. Anytime you wanted something new, whether it was a, you know, a jet ski, a new video game, I mean, a guitar, whatever, you have a new pair of sneakers, whatever your thing, dude, how they call it the happiness bump. How long did that spike last?
Yeah, right. A couple hours.
Yeah. You know, dude, you know what I mean? Like, yeah. But if it makes a significant difference on your life, like you don't own a dishwasher and then you do, okay, that's a different thing. But
right.
If you're just talking about icing, dude, it doesn't matter. Like, the extra 10,000 square feet in the house doesn't matter after, you know, whatever, when it wears off.
How did you deal with, because when you went from Oakland to San Francisco and you're signing this big deal, obviously you got expectations, and then your first few years, you didn't put up the numbers. How did you deal with the fans off the field when you're out in restaurants or out at the mall or, you know, out with your wife or whatever? How did you deal with them? Because they had to be critical.
I mean, I isolated. I was miserable. I mean, I was so defined by my performance that if I would win a game, I would be like out in the coffee shops, 8 a.m., like, hey, anyone want an autograph? Like, I'm right over here, guys. You know, and then if I would lose a game, I would literally hole up in my apartment or in my flat until I had to go to the field. Because I didn't think I was, like, worthy to even walk down the street, and people would be scowling at me. And, you know, at times people were, like, MFing me in the clubs and the bars, like, Zito, get the hell out of here. Like, you know, just a voice from the background kind of yelling at me. I mean,
right.
It was pretty miserable.
Was social media around towards the end of your
yeah,
career?
Towards the end.
Were you into 15. That? Did you get into social media at all?
Someone told me to get on Twitter in January of 2009, and I yeah. didn't even know what it was. And I started posting like a couple of these things, and then I hit the comments thing and read it, and I think I like broke down crying literally and just got so angry, and I got off it like a month later.
Good for you. But you're at Barry Zito Music now. Barry Zito Music now, if you want to follow him on Twitter.
I got one more question. I'm sorry.
Go ahead.
Again, I was raised, my father's a pastor. I get it. I my mother, very religious. I'm raised in a religious family.
Not lying, Barry. Yeah. He's a very religious guy.
No. But here's my question. Before he found God, did he find chicks? Were you running around with the chicks?
Of course he did.
Come on.
Did I what?
Were you running around with chicks? Like, was that a way that you medicated yourself?
Womanizing.
Absolutely, yeah. It's all right. In my book, man. I was running around the streets of Hollywood trying to find, you know, the most famous, like, hottest girl to validate my insecurity.
Really?
Ooh, did, you date,
famous,
did you date
give
any,
us one
yeah,
famous
any
famous
names that we
woman.
Knew?
Britney Spears.
I'm not going to talk about that. It's in the book. But listen, you guys, every one of us can relate. We've all chased hot chicks because we're insecure about ourselves.
Right. Of course.
The end.
Pretty much wrapped something up.
Hey, Barry.
Right, this book's curveball.
This was awesome, man. Appreciate it. I'm glad you're talking about it. It's awesome.
Thanks for being a good sport, too.
Thanks, fellas. I appreciate it.
Yeah. All right, buddy.
I haven't seen a picture of his wife, but I'm sure he did okay because he married Miss Missouri.
Yeah, of course.
It was Alyssa Milano.
That's who he dated.
Yeah, for a while.
She dated like every baseball player, right?
Yeah, she liked
she
the baseball
like
player.
Yeah. But I'm sure he didn't care.
That's an incredible story, man. Because you really never know what guys are going through off the field.
Dude, he made $150 million.
I know.
$150
million.
He's got one. He's got one used Silverado now.
Yeah, well, because it doesn't mean anything.
He leads a simple life.
He is
now.
Right. If you think about
you.
It,
it's
when
icing.
You get a new car or something, it's cool. And then after a while, it's your car.
I liked how you just threw the extra $10K on the size
I mean,
of
Jason,
your house.
Yeah. You had a nice townhouse when you first moved to Ashburn.
Beautiful.
The first home which you bought.
Sterling, yeah.
Really nice. Okay, Sterling. Are you happier because you then moved to Broadlands and then you moved to where you are now?
No, he actually
you're
miserable
now.
Well, he's miserable because he hates his neighbors.
I'm more miserable now.
Yeah, he doesn't. He's not happy.
Yeah.
He's got a beautiful big ass house.
You're like your third house in Ashburn, right? Or second house in Ashburn?
I'm in my house overall, second house in Ashburn.
Probably need to follow.
And I'm going to buy another. I'm
going
to buy
a bigger one.
Right.
You're going to buy a bigger one with more accoutrements, and you're going to be just as miserable.
Look, I could write a book about exact same things he was talking about.
You need to find God.
You couldn't write a book.
You could write it for me. I'll just give you my thoughts.
There you go. I'll do that.
Maybe you pay him enough.
That was great.
That's cool.
Okay, good booking there, Drabby. Nicely done.
Barry Zito.
All right, so food here? We got the table here and everything.
But we've moved the table here on a football Friday, which, of course, is
presented
by... We're going
to have like 10 smoothies each.
The Sportsbook of Hollywood Casino. Charles had every game, every bet for real sports fans. Keep it here.
You could spend the weekend doing the same old whatever, or you could conquer the weekend in the all-new Hyundai Santa Fe. Visit HyundaiUSA.com for more details. Hyundai, there's joy in every journey.